Ne vi si andrà in faccia, contro in faccia. Di sono zier di vater khatrang. We are now at item 1:15. It's now 2:10. Gauteng Tourism Authority, Miss Kona. The opportunity is now for you to present my sister. As soon as she's done, we must go direct into South African tourism, perceptions of crime and their effect on arrivals by Ntate Mthobeni. Over to you, my sister.
Sorry, good afternoon, Chair, members, Deputy Minister and colleagues. I think it's probably a double whammy, speaking after a number of presentations, so this is like a copy and paste seemingly, and also in the graveyard shift. So, Chairs, with your permission, I'll go through very briefly points of similarity with some of the other presentations. The presentation has been circulated, members do have copies, so I won't touch on the tourism mandate, alignment with provincial priorities that we have as Gauteng provincial government. Safe to say that tourism does fall within those priorities we set for ourselves for the civil administration. We've just outlined our new approach in terms of tourism promotion as a destination marketing organization, and it is in line with your typical DMOs. We won't go through that. It is available there. I think in line with prior presentations, we have seen a decline in our province in terms of international arrivals into Gauteng. The statistics that we have are, I think, similar to what has been presented earlier. One of the barriers in terms of our decline in our numbers, one of the impacts that we have there is around concerns for personal safety. So it is similar or in line with what has been presented earlier today. Equally with domestic arrivals, we have also seen a decline, but here it's also in line with your more of the economic climate impact on our local residents and citizens, as opposed to issues around safety. The tourism safety challenge in Gauteng, I think as has been mentioned by previous presenters, that we do have a number of instances where our tourists are impacted, robberies following from the airport, break-ins at our establishments, particularly bed and breakfasts. We've seen a lot of that around Sandton or Tambo International Airport specifically, so I think it's in line with what has been tabled earlier on. I think in Gauteng what we have seen is that in as much as that what we are attending and participating in our provincial joints, we are at the moment working with various stakeholders in the province, law enforcement, community safety, the embassies, etc., in terms of having a sub-forum around provincial tourism safety, so that we can go ahead and put in place an incident management protocol around 24/7 availability and access for any tourist or visitor who does have an unfortunate incident. But I think just to echo sentiments expressed earlier by different colleagues around coordination, stakeholder collaboration, and working in an integrated fashion, I think it's the same challenges that we faced within our province. And that's the route that we have started following now in terms of a more dedicated approach and a concerted effort around tourism safety. I think we've also echoed the sentiments around working more closely with law enforcement agencies and our colleagues in the private security industry, because they are the eyes and ears, I think, as the attendant mentioned earlier on. So we do have current engagements underway in terms of extending that to our different tourism sites, to our precincts, where we can elevate the sense and the presence of safety in those different precincts. I think the sentiment has also been expressed earlier on around statistics and data, not really pertaining to tourism incidents specifically, so that's something that we are trying to work through with our counterparts in law enforcement provincially. I think very similarly to what my colleague from the Western Cape Department presented, our tourism safety and support strategy has been closely aligned to what they put forward. The pillars there is around the Tourism Safety Forum as a component part of provincial joints, and there's a multi-stakeholder collaboration, looking at information and data sharing, tracking incidents, but also just coming together in a collaborative way to ensure that we do have a concerted approach to dealing with incidences. The tourist safety response, I think I've mentioned around looking at a 24/7 assistance, being real-time and available all the time, so that we can facilitate redress consultatively and collaboratively. And then also the communication strategy, I think that has also been mooted earlier on. We are on the same page and following the same approach so that there is quick communication. I think very often we see social media platforms take over formal communication around any incidences, and we want to change that in our approach. This will just detail our Tourism Safety Forum as a subcomponent of provincial joints. Critical stakeholders that we have partnered with are our police services, our Metropolitan Police Department, Government Safety Cluster in the province, our tourism value chain stakeholders and partners, obviously bringing in our communities and public. And I think that in the different regions where we do have the tourism safety monitors deployed in our five regions in the province, both within urban areas and in the townships, we do recognize the importance of community policing fora and community safety fora within those areas to bring them on board, because at a local level, that's where we need to have those partnerships. And I think, as chairs were indicating earlier on, the sense of community involvement and active participation at that level becomes critical. In as much as what at a provincial level, we can do the planning, the integration, the stakeholder engagement, at a local level, that's where your community becomes critical for us. So I think that's the stream of work we are working very closely with now in partnership with the Provincial Department of Community Safety, in taking this down to a community level. In terms of the tourist safety response, I think in partnership or in alignment with what the chair of the TBCSA presented earlier on around the different mechanisms that we want to put in place, not only from a technological point of view, but in terms of a response capability, working with communities, working in an integrated fashion. So I think there, our partnership going forward becomes even more streamlined in terms of giving effect to the tourist safety response on the ground. In terms of tourism safety awareness and communication, I think we've echoed here the sentiments expressed earlier as well around a joint communication strategy. Like I said, very often you will be the first to read on Facebook that there's been an incident. It's been reported in the media. The emotional impact of that in terms of responses and the impact it has on the reputation and the brand is significant. So I think a proactive communication strategy is what we are busy with at the moment. And also taking on safety awareness to a different level. How do we reach the tourist or the visitor as and when they step off that plane? We have started engagements with AXA, for example, at Orotambo and Lanseria, where we are wanting to train airline ground staff, for example, in how do you interact with your visitor, with your tourist who lands, not just from a safety point of view, but upholding brand South Africa, and I don't want to say Western Cape or Gauteng because we're all in it together. So it's around reconfiguring that approach and receiving visitors, not only from a brand and a management of reputation, but also from a positive communication. We don't want to hand out leaflets that talk about don't do this and don't enter. I think Judy, if I got the name correctly, spoke about that earlier on. So it's about that reorientation to the front line the minute you step off that plane. So I think it's a broader approach to communication and awareness than just targeting don't go here, don't enter this space, etc. I think the partners that we've noted, many are in the room today. We continue to work in an integrated way, and I think in the next couple of months we'll see a different output from Gauteng in terms of stakeholder collaboration. I will leave it there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Earlier on, I had thank you, my sister. Oscar, thank you very much. Earlier on, I had indicated that the department will be, not the department, SAT will be presenting. It's going to be one presentation of the department, so it will be at the end. So now we will have Ntate Norman Jones, Regional General Manager, SANParks, to come and tell us about the animals and whether they are safe. One of the One of the negative things we're told inhibits tourism was how we treat animals in South Africa. We were told by the department. So we look forward to hearing from you, Nkonde. Over to you, Dr. Johnson.
Honourable Chairpersons, Deputy Minister, members of the National Provincial Assembly, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Norman Johnson, associated with South African National Parks and specifically based in the Western Cape, associated with a cluster of parks in the western side of the Western Cape. We also have a cluster of parks in the eastern side of the Western Cape, which is the Gardner National Parks. Having said that, we were invited and quite honored by the chairperson to invite us to be part of this workshop. I think it's very valuable. As the topic says, safety and security perspective from a tourism attraction. Now, South African National Parks, as we all know, and I listened to the chairperson hammering on this Klein Dorpies thing and how important it is for us to be successful in the Klein Dorpie environment. Of course, South African National Parks is one of those entities that operates mostly in the rural areas. However, the discussion today is about safety and specifically crime related to safety on visitors and so forth. And when we look at that component, there is one national park in the system that stands out, and that is Table Mountain National Park in Cape Town. That is Table Mountain National Park. To tell you the truth, we haven't lost for the last decade any visitor in the Kruger National Park due to crime. We did so in Cape Town. Chairperson, having said that, on the screen is just a couple of the other national parks which also act as tourism attractions, so I'll speak wider than just normally Table Mountain National Park. If we look at safety and security, it's always been closely linked to tourism. An unsafe, unsecure person will never go somewhere. But over the last two decades, the issue of safety and security has gained a lot of momentum. There's a number of factors that contributed to international factors, 911, international tourism, the normal social challenges that we have, which we spoke about earlier, and then also the tourism as an industry is constantly transforming. And by that we mean, if you look back in the early 90s, 1900s, I mean, all of us, those who were cycling on the eastern bicycle wheels looking for the best car roads to do it on. And then all of a sudden they brought a bicycle, and all of a sudden we could now go off-road. Automatically, for us as an entity operating that ecotourism environment, it meant we had to adapt our strategies, have a look at these new activities that people engage in, and then adapt our management strategies accordingly. But tourists are also a very funny group, and in the sense that, and I heard it previously, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I had a long debate yesterday whether this statement is correct. Is it right or wrong, right? But nonetheless, some of them sometimes are purposefully targeted. One of the key things we know is that tourists are vulnerable. They are a vulnerable group. They are not prepared when an attack happens or anything happens on them. And as we can see from the pictures depicted, what tourists or visitors to a national park takes with them on a simple hike has changed in the last 20 to 30 years. Chairperson, I don't want to give away my age, but when I was born, there was no cell phones. There was no TVs. Today, cell phone is the most sought-after item when muggers encounter a hiker. Because most of us, irrespective of whether we're at home, we're at work, because we call it a mobile cell phone, we have it with us for the emergency situation. But that is also what the criminals are after. Beautiful picture, the city of Cape Town. Beautiful. I've heard many a times today one of the tourism destination cities in South Africa. I don't think there's a doubt about it. We go lower down and we see smack bang in the middle of this city sits what is called a national park. It is surrounded by this city It's probably the most urban national park in our country that we have. There are others, but this is the most urban in the sense that it's sitting within a metropole. Having said that, you can see that the national park is basically surrounded by the city and its suburbs residents. It also serves as a haven, a recreational haven for the locals. That is where they go and blow off their steam. But it's also internationally renowned, and that's why all visitors to Cape Town has got Table Mountain on their bucket list, whether it is you want to walk up to Lion's Head, whether you want to go with a cable car, or whether you want to visit Cape Point. But there's a couple of key attractions in Cape Town that is on international bucket list. Beautiful scenery in Cape Town. You go around Chapman's Peak and you see that view. Now, if I'm not familiar with Cape Town and I don't know where I am, I'm going to think that is a nice isolated beach to go and take a walk on. And that is the danger that we're sitting with. Most of the times we find ignorance, unknowingly, it is international visitors who normally steps into zones where locals wouldn't have stepped because they are familiar with where is danger and what is not danger zone. Table Mountain National Park, I'm not going to go into it, it stretches from Signal Hill here in the north right down to Cape Point in the south. It's about 50 kilometers stretch. It's a very fragmented national park. And it's also one of those parks that's got a huge, first of all because the mountain, the name itself is internationally renowned, but there's two national parks in South Africa, Chairperson. The one is Kruger National Park, and the other one is Table Mountain National Park. They are in our stable, they are the most visited national park in our country. Maybe due to that, if anything happens in any one of those two national parks, you're going to be on the front page of the media. But let's continue with the safety issue. If you look at what this mountain and its surrounds look like, it is very different from what we know in the Klein Dorpies and how the national park sits out there, and it's got a 2.4 meter fence, snack bank, and that 2.4 meter fence protects those on the outside from that on the inside. When you look at Cape Town and Table Mountain National Park, it's a totally different ballgame. It's open, it's not fenced. People can enter this mountain from a myriad, thousands of areas, which means that it is not like your conventional national park where you go through controlled access, we are aware of you, and so forth. In the case of Table Mountain, all of us can go into that national park now and none of the management will know that this very important group is in the national park because it's just the nature of how the park is. Also, what we need to take note when I look at the picture that has got copper at the head, you'll see that cut line in the middle. It's a fire break, what we call here. It's a gap that you make in the vegetation to protect the urban environment from wildfires coming down the mountain. But we also have to take note, not everything that we see at a gradient in Cape Town is necessarily national park. Anything below that cut line that you see, for argument's sake, is not in the national park. So if you get marked just below that line, the media is going to say, you've been marked on Table Mountain National Park. But in reality, you've been marked in the city's urban environment. This is just a slide to show you, and you won't be able to read it, but look at the circles. The circles is the areas where the hotspots is on Table Mountain, and it's statistics over the last 12 years that we've gathered. Now, of importance is the two labels I put next to the map. The top part of that map is the open access area where we don't have control or manage over that. And the bottom part is more the controlled area. And as can be seen from the incidents over more than a decade, none of the incidents happened in the controlled managed area. It all happened in the open access areas where people do not go through controlled gate systems where they are recognized. I'm going back to this beautiful Cape Town, and I'm trying to show how the millions of residents plus the thousands of visitors that enter Cape Town can enter this national park from every single angle in Cape Town, which makes it probably one of these most interesting and challenging national parks to manage. We must also remember the easy it is to get in, the same easiness you have to get out and disappear or merge back into the suburban life. You look at the bottom part, no residential areas surrounding this. It's one of those crow's controlled areas. Because of that, you find that we're much more in control, less unknown happenings and things down there. And that's no longer the nature of national parks. Interesting. On this graph, the blue line indicates the robberies that have happened over the last 12 years. Now, I heard just before lunch, there was a discussion where I heard 2010 was actually one of our best years in the country. I don't know where we went wrong in Cape Town, but in any case, I think 2010 was the year Table Mountain and crime came on the map. Why it happened, unfortunately, I don't know. But that is reality, and the graph shows it to us. The red line, or the bars below it, the red line is just to indicate what is the bars doing. Indicates actually for us the visitor numbers to Table Mountain National Park over the 12 years, and the objective was to see, is there a correlation between crime and visitation to an establishment. At the moment, from this, it's not extensive, I think we'll continue with this monitoring, but at the moment, there is no relation between the crime on Table Mountain National Park and visitation to the park. I'll get to that a little bit later. Challenges that we have, we all know when we look at the pictures, the topography is very uneven, poor signals, it's whether cell phone or radio signals. We spoke about the open access, the permeability of the boundary. And then a very important fact. I heard the discussion about, is it the police or is it the judicial system who is being trusted the most? I wouldn't know, sir. All I can say to you is that a large percentage of people that we arrest for crime on the mountain are people that are either out on parole or they are out on bail. And that is a huge concern to us, a very huge concern. And I think one of the previous speakers mentioned the latest one about that Ukrainian. It was also people that were out on from the judicial system on certain conditions, nonetheless. We also, our chairperson from the Police Portfolio Committee mentioned the word criminal syndicates. We are one of those that the criminal syndicates unfortunately follow us as National Park because we've got resources that they are interested in. And in our case, there's a clear link in criminal syndicates between poaching that happened, drugs that happen in our areas around us, and there's even different types of poaching. The guys that used to concentrate on abalone poaching are the same buggers who's eating our rhino horns on the other side. But we also have to watch out when it comes to, you get different types of tourism destinations and different ones will have different challenges going forward related to crime. For argument's sake, on Table Mountain, except for conflict and safety related to crime, there's also safety measures related to users on the mountain. Like a mountain bike coming down a track designated for hikers. Trail runners coming down track designated for horses. People with dogs not on leashes encountering horses, and it creates major, major issues on the mountain, and in some cases it can result in injury to people. Chairperson, I also like to say, visitor behavior, I'm not an expert, but visitor behavior plays a big role. And just by looking at the pictures, and I'm looking at the lady standing there with a nice pose, if you know how high that rock is from ground, it's, and if you look at the one on the left, bottom left, but that is the nature of tourists and how they are a transforming, ever-changing group, and we need to adapt our strategies in how to deal, keep them safe, and manage them effectively. The bottom one is one, obviously, which a lot of people go on hikes to have that solo moment. And now all of a sudden, what does Graham do? Graham said, don't hike alone. Which is defined sometimes the objective of certain individuals, but nonetheless. Stakeholder collaboration has been said over and over again. It's like the Rhino War in Kruger National Park. South African National Park will never win it alone unless the rest of the country comes on board. The same goes in Cape Town. It's a permeable national park with no fences, and it's important that both state and civil society gets together, puts our heads around the table to address the challenges that we have. When you look at the pictures depicted there, I can clearly say to you, Chairperson, that I am quite impressed with the members of the security cluster in Cape Town, especially the two police precincts border Table Mountain National Park, which will be the one city of Cape Town and Wynberg District. There is really excellent collaboration between the parties, including the city and other law enforcement as well. The challenge is, it's big. That is the problem. The challenge is bigger than us. Chair, I had a look last week and I looked at the pictures coming in through social media, all the collaborative actions out there, and I started counting the number of SAFs, resources, assisting us on the mountain. I'm happy. I'm very happy, sir. I may not look so, but I'm very happy. And then that evening, when I read the newspaper, and then it comes out, how many deaths have happened there on the flats. And then it doesn't make sense to me, this deployment. So, I'm not saying we should not, I appreciate it. I'm just saying, as a country, we'll have to properly think. Chair, there's another one of them. They've got it, I have to say. Mitigating measures, Chair. It has been mentioned over and over again. Technology is key for us. We're bringing in all latest technology to try and assist in dealing with this thing. I've spoken about how the development of our core and the skills that they require changes from a day to day. And then the media. I know the media is present, and I'm taking a fat chance because they're getting the platform after me, but nonetheless I have to say it, Chair, because I have the platform now. A lot of the things in this country is dependent on how the media project things. We mustn't run away from the fact that the media is not playing their part. Somebody mentioned the word, I think it's the chief whip, mentioned the word unpatriotic earlier. I'm not saying the media is unpatriotic, I'm just saying I heard a word earlier, but nonetheless, I think we need to seriously engage the media, because the media is not playing the patriotic role. Chair, before, in conclusion, I thought wanted to share this video to show that all the danger related to visitor safety is not necessarily human-induced. There's lots of other dangers when engaging in a national park. This was taken a week ago. In this situation, well, what we find, Cape Point has got some gangster baboons down there. They've been there for as long as I can remember, Chair. But nonetheless, we have to take note there is other safety concerns related to visitors too. And what worries me the most when I look at this video is the ignorance of the people and how close and proximity they are to this baboon. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. We'll now have the General Manager of Mount Nelson Hotel. Can I try to pronounce your surname? Labloda. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Labloda. Over to you.
Share my opinion. I am French. I have now lived in Cape Town in South Africa for 8 years, and I'm truly grateful and honored to work in such a fantastic country with wonderful people and with incredible potential. I've just returned from a 4-day trip to Krakow. Krakow is a small city with less than 1 million population that welcomes over 9 million tourists per annum. So why is the destination so popular? Of course, because of its cultural sites, but also because of two key points, which are cleanliness and safety. And one point that really marked me is Emirates flies to Krakow, and Emirates, the airline, and it's 8 hours away from Krakow, and we're about 8 hours away from Dubai, from Dubai. And the amount of Arabs that were in Krakow, and when I see the potential that we have here in Cape Town to welcome all these Arabs during their summer when it's 40, 45 degrees and they love the rain, they love the colder weather. And I think that we're definitely missing something, that when I see all the tourists that were in Krakow from that destination, and I'm sure we would have so much more potential to welcome these tourists if it wasn't for the safety issue. And I would have the chance of going to Saudi Arabia and Dubai. And one of the key issues that they'll always ask is always security. And so I'm sure there would be so much more potential if you could get this matter sorted. So Cape Town is a unique destination, as we all know, and it has so much to offer. And it's very exceptionally rare that you hear anybody saying something negative after returning from Cape Town. In the past few years, we've had a few headwinds, and of course we had the drought, and to a certain extent we also had the effect of Ebola that hurt us. However, now the major concern is definitely crime, and crime is definitely the number one concern for tourists to shy away from our city. The 2010 World Cup, I believe, and I think I might be wrong now, I believe created a very positive image in South Africa. However, I tend to believe now that the positives from the 2010 World Cup has since vastly deteriorated. Our planet is big, and there are many destinations. An article that I read yesterday by Condé Nast Traveler just mentioned the 16 cities to catch on before your friends catch on. So cities like Lagos, Dakar were highlighted. So there is a fierce competition, and Cape Town cannot surpass its security issues. If Cape Town cannot surpass its security issues, the destination will be rejected from tourists across the world. A few years ago, Cape Town benefited from the uncertainty in North Africa because of terrorism, because of Egypt and Thailand, which were facing some major security issues. And I'm afraid now with the ongoing issues that are not getting better, that's going to go in the other direction. Cities such as New York were able to deal with security issues. In the 70s, when I was a little kid, I lived in the States, and it was very dangerous at the time to walk down 42nd Street or to go to Times Square. And now, these are major tourist attractions. My dream is to be able to walk down Champagne Garden at night to go to the Taj. However, we are far from this. Even during the day, there are sections that I would not recommend to go through company gardens for some of the guests. The National Gallery is a wonderful museum. However, the site in front of the National Gallery is not always what tourists necessarily want to see. And it's a shame because I think the National Gallery has so much more to offer, and I enjoy going to the National Gallery more than I do to the Zeitz Museum or to the Normal Foundation, for instance. I've now lived in Cape Town for 8 years, like I said, and security issues are not getting better. At the hotel, the major issues we have had to face in the past 8 years, we had, of course, the robbery that I'll talk about in a few minutes. We had a murder which happened just next to my house on Wilkinson Street. I live on property. We we've had to postpone one of our projects called the Leica experience, which I'll talk about. There have been a number of guests that have been mugged. One issue which is dear to me also, my role is to be there for the safety of the guests, but also the safety of our staff. And we've had a number of our vans, which provides transportation like most of the hotels for our staff, we've had a number of our vans that have been hijacked in the past. And luckily, nobody was ever injured, but it could have been a lot worse. So that's one of my major concerns also. So security not only for our guests, but also for our staff when we have to drive them back to the townships. And finally, we also have earth issues. And I know we have issues throughout Cape Town, throughout South Africa, but we have earth issues at the hotel as well, where we're not always able to monitor theft as much as we'd like to. And I'm sure, and I've talked to a lot of my fellow GMs around Cape Town, and it's the same issue. It's not only at the Mount Nelson, it's also at other properties within Cape Town. So for the first issue, which is the robbery, the major concern was the way the press escalated the matter, and it was vastly distorted information. It was mentioned in the press that 15 robbers entered the hotel in two cars. First of all, I find it quite difficult to put 15 men in two cars, small cars. So that was completely wrong. The projected heist was a failure, and minimal items were taken from the property, and this was never really mentioned. The robbers were in and out of the hotel in less than 5 minutes. They interacted with four of our guests, of which none were injured. Staff that were involved received counseling from the hotel, and a number, and what we also do, and this is something which is increasing tremendously, we have a lot of our staff that are dealing with violence at the townships, and they're asking for us to provide counseling for them. So due to the attempted heist, we've had to boost our security staff, so we've got more security, and we have plans on upgrading the security at the two main entrances of the property. So these projects are being submitted to the different heritage organizations. It's going to take a while to get approved, and we hope to have the project completed before the end of the year. So what have been the other consequences from this attempted robbery? We have received a number of calls from our loyal guests. We have a lot of loyal guests that come every year to the hotel, and we're very concerned and also very supportive. None of them have canceled their reservations. On the other hand, we've had a very large American group that represented about a million rand of revenue that decided to cancel their trip altogether, not only to the Mount Nelson, but to Cape Town, South Africa altogether. We've had also a large family from England that decided to cancel their festive booking reservation. And so we've had a few cancellations, but not a huge amount, which is very fortunate. So it's still quite difficult to measure the impact it's going to have. But at this stage, the hotel is doing very well, so we're having a fantastic year, despite tourism in Cape Town, which is not as good as it was maybe a few years ago. But we're very lucky at the Mount Nelson. We're having a record-breaking year. And when I look at the reservations, the forward reservation for 2020, when I compare the pace where we were last year compared to this year, we're ahead of last year, so that's also very positive. The major change that we've done since the attempted robbery is that we've asked the tenants, so the major purpose for the heist was to go to the jewelry shop. So we have a jewelry shop which we outsource. And so we've asked the tenants to remove all the jewelry from the shop. So we don't have a jewelry shop anymore. It's a deluxe courier shop. So I think the major reason why we had this robbery wasn't to attack the tourists. I don't think they really cared about attacking the tourists. It was definitely to aim at getting the jewelry. Hence the reason we decided not to do the jewelry anymore. So there's no more diamonds, no more gold, no more rubies. All that's been removed from the property. So the other major incident that I've had since I've been at the property is the murder on Wilkinson Street. Luckily, this did not have too much negative repercussions because it was not mentioned in the press too much. Sometimes, you know, strange, sometimes you have stories that really make it big in the press, and other times they just you don't hear too much about it. So unfortunately at the time I had a large American group. Of course they were very scared, very traumatized about the whole idea, but that was dealt with them quite easily. another project that we had, we have a partnership with Leica. The Leica, they do fantastic cameras, and they also have beautiful binoculars. And so we had a project called First Light, where we had a map where we could give the binoculars to the guests to go in different areas of Table Mountain to look at the beautiful scenes from the sunrise. And because of the height and security issues that we've had, we're not promoting this anymore. We don't want to take the risk of trying guests to go to Table Mountain if they get mugged. We don't want to take that. So we always advise the guests to either take the cable car to play it safe, or else to go with a guide and not to go on their own. Then in the past year or so, there's been an increase of guests being mugged in the CBD area. And in the past, when I first came here in 2011, sorry, I didn't seem to hear about all these muggings that were taking place. And it seems now that this is something which is happening much more often. Last week, we had an Australian couple that stayed at the hotel. They were coming from Joburg. And in Joburg, they experienced an armed robbery in a shopping mall. And when they were in Cape Town, they walked back from the waterfront to the Mount Nelson, and they were mugged between Bree Street and Long Street. So like I said also before, the security of our staff is also a major concern. And in the past few years, we've had our transportation van that were hijacked. So we've had three, four incidents of hijacking. And finally, also, we have our own security issue, like I said, within the hotel. There have been a number of in-house robberies where guests have their money stolen in their rooms. This happens at properties within Cape Town and basically around the world, but I've worked in many hotels around the world, but I've never had so many in-room theft incidents that I've had in Cape Town. And unfortunately, Mount Nelson is part of Belmont, which is a luxury chain, where we have trains and cruises and hotels. And out of all the properties that we have around the world, we're on all continents, the Mount Nelson is unfortunately the hotel which has the most crime-related incidents. So we are fortunate to live in one of the most unique and diversified cities in the world. However, without solving the security and safety issues, it will be challenging to grow. Unfortunately, all safety matters in South Africa have huge consequences and sometimes get taken out of proportion. For instance, I'm from France, and if we would have had the same incident that we had in France during the past 6 months with the yellow jackets, if this would have happened in South Africa, it would have been devastating for the next 2 years probably. And having that happening in France, I was just there last week, and you know there's still lots of tourists. So everything, all security aspects in South Africa takes it to the next level. And I know that there's something we need to do about it. I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't have the solution. Unfortunately, I wish I had the solution. I don't even have the solution on my property, so I can imagine for the whole country. But it's definitely something that we need to work on. We need to change the perception. And maybe it has to do with the press. Maybe sometimes the press is stating too many incidents. I'm not too sure. So to conclude, I had one of my colleagues that said to me, when he knew that I was coming to this meeting, he said, here, you can close your meeting by saying this. He said, crime creates unemployment, and unemployment creates crime. Get rid of the crime, and it will help solve some of the unemployment issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Laplota, for the presentation. How's Asanda? Asanda is from SANET. Their chairperson is Masati. Yeah. So she has got all the mandate from Masati to speak about this
presentation, right?
An unpatriotic media. Over to you, my sister.
I'm not sure how fair it is to start my presentation with accusations of not being unpatriotic, but I'll do my best. I just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to present here at SANEF. We don't take these opportunities lightly because a lot of people are not always aware or understand the work that we do and why it's important. So before I get into the reason why we're here, I just thought I'd highlight a little bit who we are and what our principles and priorities are so that we can understand why and how we become potentially seen as unpatriotic. So the South African National Editors Forum, or SANEF, is a membership-based organization, and it's got editors and senior editorial executives operating in all media in South Africa. Our key focus is media freedom, and this is on a day-to-day basis, fighting on the front lines, trying to make sure that, you know, media and press workers are able to do their work without fear. And then at a deep structural level, we look at research. And then at a deep structural level, we seek through research, education, training to influence policy and legislation. And that's why it was a great honor to be invited. Okay. Okay. So SANEF has various programs and campaigns that it runs. A lot of them, obviously, as I've said, our focus is media freedom, so a lot of them are around media freedom. We look at violations, media freedom violations from the side of government, political parties, corporate, citizens, and basically we also look within the media itself, and we use the courts sometimes in order to try and get justice in terms of achieving this idea, this dream of media freedom. We also release statements and meet with leaders in government, the police, the judiciary, and have meetings such as this one to make sure that we engage all stakeholders in South African society. And our long-term structural work, and that is to say our long-term work that's meant to have long-term effects, is our education and training. We have a number of subcommittees. The education and training one focuses on and prioritizes training for media and for media journalists, or for journalists in the media, linked to the press code, the safety of journalists, reporting elections, and gender empowerment. We also have a diversity and ethics committee, and this committee tackles issues of race and gender inequalities, particularly in the newsroom, but also, you know, in the media industry as a whole. And last year, in 2018, we released a report called The Glass Ceiling, which basically was research around sexism and patriarchal practices within the newsroom and in the media industry as a whole. So we are currently in 2019 looking mainly at job losses and the impact that job losses is going to have on issues of diversity. We also, I think I'll skip this one and just go straight to, okay. So one of our biggest projects at the moment, which we are proud of, is the Media Credibility and Ethics Inquiry, which we are currently busy running. So we're running a Credibility and Ethics Inquiry with retired Judge Kathy Sato, Negiwe Bigicha, and Richard Mkondo. The inquiry's purpose is to strengthen ethical practices, processes, and policies across the industry, and to rebuild trust with our audiences. We're hoping to hold various high-profile conference, to get industry buy-in and participation, and to sign a collective action plan to strengthen ethical practices from June 2020, and that's next year. Now, coming to this issue of media and tourism, safety, we just thought we'd speak a little bit about what is happening and where we are going wrong in the media, and also speak about, you know, possible spaces for collaboration and dialogue between government and us. So we understand that tourism is a high potential, is high employment potential. It's a high value industry in South Africa. The media reportage has not been developmental in the past because banking, for example, as an industry, gets more positive airplay than tourism and some of the good work that tourism does, and there's a reason for this. There's also, we acknowledge that overall crime, the crime narrative needs to be reviewed and a more nuanced reportage needs to be undertaken. We also acknowledge that overall narratives around xenophobia need to be reviewed and a more nuanced reporting around this also needs to be taken. And all of this, as I've said, requires dialogue between government, media, and civil society. Now, the reportage that we have at the moment focuses mainly on, you know, tourists that do end up getting hurt. We're not really reporting on the millions of tourists that do arrive, that enjoy their stay, and that leave our shores with no incidents. And there are several reasons for this. A lot of them have to do with the nature of the media itself and some of the changes that have happened within the media. So one of the problems that we have as an industry is that our newsrooms are under-resourced, which means that more journalists are doing the job of many people. So newsrooms are currently understaffed, and this is because of, you know, changes in the ways in which the media operates at the moment, but also there's huge underfunding that's happening, and this is across the board, whether you're talking TV or broadcasting, or you're talking, you know, the online or print. And so what we're seeing is that journalists who are usually young are being forced to become multimedia journalists, which means that one journalist is going to write a story for online, is going to file a radio report, is going to file a TV piece, and all at the same time, they also need to be live tweeting each event. And this speed and the need for speed leads to an inability to critically analyze issues like crime, like xenophobia, and particularly issues around tourist crime, which combines the two. And journalists are part of society, and therefore, we must understand that they hold biases like all South Africans, which means that much like South African society, we do have issues of racism, sexism, xenophobia, and other isms which do show up in our media. And one of our, in our state of the media report, which comes out, you know, every 2 years or so, has highlighted some of the issues within newsrooms that we are dealing with at the moment. So what I'm trying to say really is that there's a tendency to sort of look at South African society and say these are the problems of society, and then somehow not expect that the media itself is going to have, you know, the problems of society. So I just thought I'd remind people that journalists are, you know, human beings who sit within society, and therefore the problems of society are also the problems that we face as an industry. We are largely underfunded, as I said, which means that our stories are increasingly becoming more and more poorly researched. And the fast pace of the media cycle, which is 24 hours, makes it difficult to stay with the same story beyond, you know, the sensation and the sensationalism. So an example of this is the Home Affairs visa story. That's when the Home Affairs minister changed the laws and there was a big hurrah. When the minister changed the laws back, there was initially some reporting, but we haven't necessarily gone back to say the minister changed the laws and this is the positive or good impact that has had since that correction was made. So these are the places and the areas in which we're lacking. There's also a lack of capacity in education and the resources available to journalists when covering specialized industry stories. So I think the key thing that we're interested in finding out, and we're hoping that this kind of forum will help us with, is what can government, civil society, and media do to work together on the impact of media reporting and tourism and economy, and how do we do this in a way that doesn't promote censorship but also doesn't lead us to being, you know, the mouthpieces or the PR agencies of government, which we are not. So I just thought I'd also just give an overview of some landmark cases around tourism, tourists being involved in crime, and tourists being victims of crime in South Africa. So we have the, you know, the example that happened during apartheid, which was Amy Bill, which had a very interesting, you know, response in the sense that her family saw this as an opportunity to get involved and establish the Amy Bill Foundation. And then we've got post-apartheid examples like Shirin Divani and the Diego Novella cases. And I highlight these cases because, as has been said earlier, we talk a lot about instances where tourists have been victims of crime, but there's also a lot of tourists who are coming here, particularly to, you know, perpetuate crime. And these two cases of Shirin Diwani and the Diogo Novella cases are such cases. And although Shirin Diwani was able to get away with the crime, part of what we could have done as a media that we didn't was because there was a lengthy process and the family was accommodated in South Africa in every possible, and there were no incidents of crime against them reported. So we missed an opportunity, for example, I think both in the media and also in the country, to highlight the fact that, you know, there was a tragedy that happened. But for the duration of these people's time, this is the experience that they've had, and that every single infrastructural need that they had, that it actually was met by the country, even though ultimately the final decision was not one that people wanted. And then also, just to highlight again, even in the Diogo Novella case, the guy was eventually sentenced to 20 years in jail, and the last time I checked, he was appealing. You know, this again, that's also a case where a tourist or a visitor had come here, had perpetuated a crime, and our you know, justice system, which we know doesn't always work, actually did work this time, and the guy was caught, and he is currently in the prison system. And so I think we need to work together, I think as government, as media, and civil society, to highlight those cases that when things do go wrong, that there are, you know, there are things that we do, and there are sort of systems that we put in place that actually do have successful outcomes. And so what is the way forward really in terms of this? It is that government and media relationship needs to be worked on more. Communication needs to be strengthened between media and government. One of the issues that some of my colleagues raised is that there isn't enough support provided from a government perspective in making statistics and analysis of the statistics easily available. And if it is, it's not happening regularly enough. So, for example, one colleague mentioned that, you know, we have the crime release, and that happens once a year. How about having a monthly crime stat release so that everybody knows what's happening at any given stage and what some of the biggest issues we're facing are? And I think also that politicians and government office bearers are not always easily accessible to the media. And the question is the minister, is the MEC, is the DG, are all these people available equally when things are going well and when things are not going well? And so it's very easy to get hold of a government spokesperson and a minister when you are reporting on a positive story, but when you are actually chasing them up for a story that they may not necessarily want to talk about, it becomes very difficult. So I think it's very important that we start to think of the media as a partner in, you know, Brand SA. So not as a PR agency, but as a partner that we can rely on, that we can use in terms of disseminating information that we have. And that even when it's scary and when, you know, one is not so sure in terms of having all the answers, we still need to reach out to the media. We still need to provide them with the information that they have. And then the last point that my colleagues also asked that I highlight is the fact that one of the biggest issues that keeps coming up when we attend media conferences is that our brothers on the African continent who are journalists really struggle to get visas to come to South Africa, and a lot of the time conference organizers have to cancel speakers and have to change their programs at the last minute. And this does not bode well for us, because if journalists across the continent are experiencing this, then when stories of xenophobia come out, it correlates and it makes sense. And so we need to develop a system of having more journalists from across the continent come here and be able to experience South Africa from themselves, so that they're not relying on information that they've heard externally, and the information they have is actually solid. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Asanda. As the department prepares, you are basically saying, also, Asanda, it is a collective responsibility to ensure rebranding, repositioning, and renewal of South Africa. And thanks very much. Give your chairperson our greetings. Yes. Deputy Minister? No, thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police and yourself. We want to take this opportunity and thank you for taking this initiative. It's been long overdue that we bring everybody in one room and have a discussion around the challenges of tourism safety in our country. Because tourism is one of the key economic sectors that has got a potential to contribute towards economic growth and assist us in dealing with the challenges that the country is facing of joblessness and inequality. So this opportunity therefore gets unfortunately inhibited by some of the negative factors, of which key among them is the issue of fear of safety. When a tourist wants to travel, the first question that they ask themselves is, safe to go to South Africa? And then they start looking at clips and various social media, and then they come to the conclusion that, oh no, it's not safe going there. And therefore they tend to go somewhere. So it's a matter that we think this exercise is going to push everybody to come up with a comprehensive national strategy that will begin to assist us to have the same message, many voices, on the issue of safety. It's important because we're not talking to each other as it's supposed to be, as private, as public, and as civil society as a whole. The issue of safety, for example, there are some contributing factors that we normally don't take into consideration. Like one member was saying, the issue of poverty, unemployment, it's contributing to it. If you go to our national parks, I'll use the example of Kruger National Park because I know it's better. You see the Kruger National, the most developed area of Kruger National Park, it's in Mpumalanga. And it cuts across three municipalities, that is Bushbuck Ridge, Bombela, and Gomas. If you look at the economic setups of the communities around Kruger National Park, it's shame. Because they are very poor, they're struggling. There is a lot of economic activity that is taking place in Kruger. But there's no beneficiation from the community. So they don't see Kruger as a benefit to them. But there's a lot of money that Kruger is bringing to South Africa. But nothing that is left to communities around. So social responsibilities is one of them. It's not taking place. Products that must be developed and be owned by communities around there is not there, which then will make the contribution to a sustainable livelihood. So it's one of the issues that we need to look into. Silos planning with ourselves, provinces and various departments, it's a matter that we must deal with. We have, for example, your safety monitors that are operating in almost all provinces. But the management and control is a problem. And the training that they get, some of the training that they get is not related to tourism. It's only a little bit of security. But on tourism, because they must understand the product themselves. They must understand tourism themselves first, so that they become passionate about it. It's not just about saying, no, I'm a tourism monitor here. But it has, that individual doesn't understand tourism. not trained on tourism, on hospitality and all those things. So it's a thing that you need to look into so that they've got multiple training and skills around safety and around tourism. But the control management as well, they deal with tourism, but they're in safety most of them. And there's no clear accountability line between, or collaboration on how they account on and do their work, between safety and tourism. We need to deal with those as well, so that we are able to manage it in a manner that all of us, we understand what these tourism monitors are doing, both from a safety side, but also from a tourism perspective. The MOU with the police is going to help us maybe to deal with some of those issues at great deal. But there's a strategy that the DG is going to present, and his team will begin to tell us what is it that we think needs to happen to deal with this thing of tourism safety in South Africa. Without waste of time, Chair, I'll ask the DG to take us through. He will indicate when SAT is supposed to come in, when DDG, if there's a need for them to come in, to come in. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Just to indicate to this collective that the Deputy Minister will, in the course of the presentation, excuse us from the meeting because he has to attend to something which has cropped up. So when that time arrives, Deputy Minister, you are welcome to leave. And because you are going to leave in the course of the presentation, on behalf of the collective of the two the portfolio committee chairpersons and the collective of membership of the two portfolio committees, we really want to thank you for arriving here in the morning and spending the whole day with us here, listening, sifting important information, processing it, because from here on the side of the executive, as the minister and the deputy minister, working together with police, the expectation will be that we will be getting regular updates on the way forward that we are going to emerge with here from today. So we really want to thank you very, very much for showing the leadership in the manner in which you have been with us the entire day here. And qualitative listening, sometimes it's very important to do qualitative listening. So we thank you very much for that. Over to you. Let me give over to my colleague. We are getting used to my co-chair, so that I don't use their power alone. We must make sure that we co-chair. Over to you, co-chair.
Thank you, host chair. He's the host. We're the invited chair, right? DM, I think you can convey to the minister and to the executive that from the portfolio committee of police, firstly, we are very appreciative that you have been here. Our DM has also been here. He has had to leave to the NCOP because they're answering questions in the NCOP. But please convey to the minister that we are committed to an action plan with outcomes. That MOU, there's honorable members who will be monitoring that MOU. There are members of the portfolio committee are also asking what about the other provinces. And I said to Honorable Whitfield, why do you want us to sit with tourism all the time? But there's an eagerness for us to continuously engage with you. It won't be a once-off. That is what we are saying as police portfolio committee. We are saying then that crime is the single biggest threat to your industry. And DM, if we do not have that comprehensive national strategy with us having targets, we'll take all the other units from the private security, all our different units, and we will include in their performance indicators their response to tourism and crime. So you have that guarantee, and thank you again, DM, for being with us the whole day. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister. And honorable members and colleagues, there is a South African tourism team that has come with us here. There are two board members, Don Robertson as well as Ravi Nadesan. And when it comes to discussions, we will all take responsibilities, and Daryl is also here, the next member. I want to just start with this, where the last speaker ended. About a year ago, we went to Kenya. It was the same time that we had the unrest in Westboro, in Johannesburg. South African broadcasting community that is active in Kenya was showing all the activities that were happening in Westboro live from morning till sunset. But when they broke, they also had news from the continent. At that time, the news from the continent happened to be news largely from Kenya. The news about Kenya was about a youth group from Kenya that has won something almost like this Indovu choir. They had won that. And it was flighted on South African media in Kenya, all over. And whenever they stopped that, then they went back to Westbury and actually showed Westbury live. Now, at the end of it all, I went to a Kenyan station. The Kenyan station, which was broadcasting locally, was broadcasting specifically there were some quarrels about unpaid money for millions that has been provided to the silos by farmers in the community, and they wanted government to make the payments urgently. And it was heating up, but it was contained, it was in the Kenyan media. In what is deemed to be their regional media, they were flighting what has just happened in the US when they've won something. So there is that sort of that. Sometimes we do put messages ourselves, which at the end of the day, I mean, to say that they are riots, that's okay, we should say that. But to have this live throughout, it is another whole different aspect. This slide may not be readable in terms of the actual names of places, but what it shows is the presence of South African tourism in terms of its marketing footprint across the different hubs throughout the world. So if we look at the continent, within Southern Africa, the office in Sandton would then become the strategic hub which services the entire SADC. West Africa, the office in Nigeria would then service the entire hub, and so on. And same goes for Southeast Asia and the North Americas as well as South America. I'm not going to go too much into details about this, but it is different attributes that get tracked. But suffice to say that on the left-hand side, I think it will be a lot more clearer on the actual slide. On the left-hand side is what is coming out of the brand tracking.
Sorry, DG. Honorable members and our visitors, if there are those who want to sip some coffee, some fresh tea, and so on, it's just outside. So you can just quietly go and sip some coffee or tea. There's no way. Yes.
This is a tracking over a period of February 2018 right until June 2019. The far left of this bar graph shows safety and security environment as being tracked over that particular period. But what it's showing is that there is very little change that comes out that shows that there is some sort of recognizable change that is being recorded. This particular table, this metric, what it shows is variables that are being tracked and what the different countries, which are market countries for South Africa, rate us. Now, if it says 1, you should be happy about that. If it says 10, we shouldn't be happy about that. Now, going through this, there is a lot that is going for us, whether it's adventure, whether it's nature, memorable experiences in some of the different markets and so on. But when it comes to the issue of safety and security, it is not looking good. It goes right to the bottom. So that's something that's a reaction. This reaction is coming from consumers. So these are surveys that are done in all these different markets, and the consumers are saying this is what it is. However, what we've been discussing as well is that this must also be juxtaposed with perceptions that come from the people that are responsible for the bookings and so on, the operators and trade. We already heard Mr. Tolman was talking about feedback that he's getting directly earlier, that the market says we need to resolve this issue, or else we would find ourselves in a much more deeper trouble. This is a tracking of this perception of safety and security over the same period that I talked to earlier. Out of a score of 7, there are markets that I wanted to draw attention to, because it may look like this for now, because this is up to 2018, it may look like this and we may think there's certain improvements that we should begin to celebrate, but it's not necessarily the case entirely. If you take an example of Nigeria, from 2017 to 2018, we showed a slight improvement. But that improvement is associated with, it's been very quiet with the noise around issues like xenophobia and so on and so forth. If we were to go and do this particular survey now, that's the question, and we go to Nigeria and we ask the same questions that we had asked with what they did last week with the student movements and so on, it may actually show a very different picture. But what it says is that we need to continuously track this. I want to say something that Judy was talking to. When we track this, much as we are talking to the consumers, it is also important for us to go and use
marketing, as well as web analytics on the digital side. So what it does, it will be able to identify someone who is seeking bad news. It will identify platforms which that person uses to seek that bad news. It will also identify which other platforms have got algorithms that assist in directing people towards the bad news. Now, when she talked about the 130 or so websites where these things are, there is a whole lot more of such websites. Our responsibility is to be able to identify them, but also to identify how do people actually get all the way to those websites, so that we could find a way, either through algorithms, to direct them to good news stories on sites that we know already we can associate with, or we are able to actually do more on our own websites to be able to optimize whatever web, so that those webs, whenever they're trying to get this information, they're directed to those immediately. So that's the kind of response that we believe, if we bring in from a brand management point of view, it would assist in trying to arrest some of the, because there are people getting this information without having even gone too far to look for it. And it is readily available when they go in, first thing that comes out becomes it. So how do we actually divert this and get them to actually first get the information we want them to get? And I think that's something that we would have to spend a lot more time on and a bit of resources on as well. Unfortunately, we've been getting, since October 2018 until August 2019, we've been getting travel advisories. We got travel advisories from the Canadians, from the US, from Australians, New Zealand, from China. And China rarely issues. When they issue, it means they really have come to a point where they feel there's a need. Netherlands and Germany and France. Netherlands, some positive signs. One of the groups that had suffered as victims of opportunistic crime, which was a follow to the hotel type in Johannesburg, they've ultimately come back to South Africa, and they've had a pleasant experience. So people are not writing off South Africa. That's the message we are saying. But there is a very clear message that says we need to do something about what is going on, or else we will then get into the types of problems that the industry was relating. I think the problem statement has been so eloquently explained throughout this morning. There is an existing National Tourism Safety Forum. Ourselves and the SAPS as lead coordinators, together with TPCSA, but there's a number of other agencies there and business associations, from banking to business against crime to National Accommodation Association, to FEDASA, which I don't see here, to SASA, to Department of Transport, to the current company associations and so on. And these are largely the people that have made a contribution towards what are we going to do about this. And in terms of the broader strategy, we do have some short-term things that we want to look into. We do have some medium-term, and we've got some long-term. We also have a focus on making sure that this whole issue of tourism being a concurrent function at each sphere, and not just of government, but of the sector, we are able to empower that level to be able to deal with the issues at that particular level. So this would, amongst other things, include the role, what would then be the role of the local police station? What would be the role of the provincial government? What would be the role of the local tourism association vis-a-vis the role of your TBCSAs and so on? So we have sort of like separated the responses into three types of responses: proactive measures and other proactive measures. Amongst other things, we are saying it is important for us to identify the hotspots and give a comprehensive analysis of these hotspots. But this is not for public consumption. It's for us to be able to understand the tactical approaches that must then follow once we have got that detailed nuanced understanding. But as I was talking about technology, Honorable Chairperson, that analysis would benefit from us being able to feed messages at a locality or as people approach a locality. Now, there was something that was raised earlier with regards to protests. 2 weeks back, the CE and the HOD are here. 2 weeks back, we were in Mpumalanga, in Ehlanzeni municipality. We went to the community near Numbi Gate. When we got to that community, they were quite clear that they understand that the tourists are inconvenienced, but at the same time, it seems they get listened to when they inconvenience the tourists. Now, we looked at all the issues that are in that area. Amongst others, it is issues pertaining to settlement of land, land claims within the park, existing agreements in terms of benefit sharing and so on. And all these issues, then they cloud everything else, and they are then directed to the tourists. Other issues would be basic service delivery issues that have got absolutely nothing to do with issues of beneficiation from tourism and so on. Now, as a department, we are assisting most of these communities. In some instances, it's a question of opening up additional gates. In others, it's working with SANParks to create activity hubs that could then add to the to commercial activities that can take place within those particular areas and so on. But we do believe that that is one side of it. The other side of it will have to be social facilitation. And if we don't do social facilitation with these communities, it's unlikely that we are going to be able to resolve some of those particular challenges. We have already spoken about the app. I think we explained how it's going to work and what it entails. Then there are responsive measures. The responsive measures, I want to emphasize the issue of crisis communication. So when an incident happens, I receive an SMS immediately that comes from the DDG. But the DDG has got their own network, and they are able to then make sure that communication is flawless. But there are other aspects that we need to deal with. There are issues of translation. So a person is there, they are not able, they had hired a car, they didn't have a tourist guide. They cannot speak any of the South African languages, and they need immediate help. So part of what we're looking at is to make sure that there is this database of interpreters that could readily provide such much needed support and assistance as and when required. There are also issues of working with our DERCO. So in this particular instance, an incident happens. At times, the media gets it firsthand before we could do anything about it, and it goes viral. Once it has gone viral, we now have to go back and start trying to manage that situation with DERCO. But what we are saying is that the various relations that we have got with all the different missions that are in the country, we are making use of that to make sure that there's a bit of a soft landing in terms of the message that also reaches the family of the people that may have become victims, and depending on the extent as well to which they have fallen victims, it is important that that message is managed carefully, and the embassy ideally should be the first to know before the message goes out and they find it basically in the media. These communications that we need to deal with once everything has happened. One of the challenges that we will need to find better ways of closing. Yes, it worked during 2010, I must say, because of the temporary courts that were there. When someone has been inconvenienced in their trip, the first thing they want to do is to get out of here. When they have left, there's police parade that needs to be done. Now, all those coordination and technological dynamics and so on, that's part of what we need to attend to as part of the strategy, to ensure that we're not basically saying that this person must be coming back here to face the same situation, so to say, and relive the experience and so on. So those are the issues that we're talking about in terms of communication. But it would also require, it's not only going to be us and the police, it would also require us to work with the NPA as an example. But the NPA would also tell us whether they would be able to work on the basis of evidence collected in a particular way, and so on. And that is something that we would need to go into in a lot more detail. The investigation issues, the swiftness in the investigation, I must say that we've seen every time there's something that has been reported, the police are already on site, they're taking the statements and so on, but of course the investigation would come at a later stage. And that's an area, because if we have one or two good examples of consequences, it will send a message right away to say that you can't take advantage of a tourist because you know this person is going to leave immediately. You will be caught and you will be prosecuted and you will go to jail. Then there's an issue of aftercare measures. I've spoken to some of them, but this aftercare that relates to what we do in the market, I think that is a lot more critical. For purposes of completeness, there's been some suggestions of having a localized insurance and so on. But when we looked at it, we thought anybody can take insurance from whichever insurance company if they want to insure their property, and if they lose it, they can claim, without actually creating a special vehicle. And I'm putting that on the record so that should it actually come up at a later stage, there is indeed a position with regards to that. The communications protocol, there's been emphasis made already about one message, multiple messengers, and we are saying that will be the same approach that we are going to take, all of us. And I will speak a little bit more with regards to what is it that we would like to... Let me use this slide because it covers those slides that I was going to talk to you. Industry has got a very direct role in terms of communication. Part of this was highlighted by TBCSA earlier. But they receive the client. And the awareness of the client with regards to the do's and don'ts are largely in the hands of industry. Whether we're talking about issues pertaining to matters that can be shared by tourist guides, or whether we are talking about issues that relate to
the neighborhood within which a particular attraction or a particular product is located. However, there is also an issue here with the opportunity that arises from the use of technology, particularly when it comes to mobile and the link between mobile and social. If we were to say that the groups that Mr. Tolman was talking about, the incident that happened to, if we were to say that those groups, we have a database, but we are then able to track the locality and so on, and the places where they are going to be, the places where they are going to be located with either the buses, or either the car rental companies and so on, we are able to intercept that and we are able to send a communique to say, this road at this particular point in time is closed. Technology to do that is available. And it is practical. It can be done. So those are some of the things. But we'll have to deal with this with the understanding of other things like the Poppy Act and so on, so that we don't fall foul of that. But we believe that technology could assist us a lot in terms of making sure that preventative information is actually sent. Government, we are saying we would like to see the political principles going there and giving comfort and a sense of assurance that we are dealing with these things. We had one incident, Honorable Chairperson, where some Chinese were victims of something. And we visited this place, to the hospital. When we got there, we were merely giving our, we were comforting them, basically. What we did not know was that this whole thing was live on WeChat in China. 130 million people were watching it live. And whatever we might have done then could have actually gone the different way altogether. After that, there was a lot of good feedback to say, at least there was compassion and this. And the person also said, I love this country. I will definitely come back. I will not be deterred by this. But at the end of the day, the reality is that everything that is happening is being watched. It is out there. Even if the media does not necessarily directly publish it, all of us now have become instant journalists because we are sending these things on Twitter, on all sorts of things. So that is where we need to actually play some active role. I think these are things that I don't think I should necessarily go into. We are saying that if we've got a very high, we're calling it high-level crisis, but if we've got really something extremely crucial, we should be responding in 2 hours. The message should already be there, and we believe that media could also assist us in this. We are hoping that within that particular amount of time, we would have already had link-ups with families, with the embassies and so on, to be able to make sure that they don't hear us talking about their citizens and what has happened to them first in the media when there's nothing that has actually been directed to them. And then we're saying if it is, and we're saying that the political principals would actually be messengers in that regard. And if it so happens to be something that is manageable, petty crimes and so on, we would then look at an issue of 6 to 24 hours in terms of the kind of responses that we could then deal with. I think this is just detail in terms of the issues pertaining to communications and the some of the risks that we have analyzed. I've spoken to these slides in terms of the different role players, and we expect that each role player would be able to take full responsibility. Some of this is already happening, but we want to consolidate this through the MOU and make sure that that MOU clarifies all the roles and all the feedback mechanisms in terms of making sure that we account on whether this is working or not. I do know that the ministers are looking at
a possible meeting in a week or so. Because last week they were saying within 2 weeks. So that would then also consolidate all this, because we would then be presenting some of the details that are here to say this is some of the roles that we would like to see them play. Emphasis that I wanted to make, and I don't think I'll go through the rest of the slides. Emphasis that I wanted to make is that we as tourism have a role to manage the tourism brand. And our responsibilities out there must be about making sure that the brand message, positive, gets to the client, gets to the consumers. And in doing so, the police will be playing their part on the other side to make sure that they deal with what the police deal with. We will be collaborating on the tourism safety. Some of the gaps we have identified with that is the fact that you find a locality that has got community policing forum. Now, if a locality has got policing forum and it already has significant number of volunteers and they don't end up into something that has got a stipend and somebody else comes into that, it's creation of additional problems. So those are the kinds of things that we've looked at, and to say we'll need to look at this in much more detail. The police will assist in training these youth. In the case of St. Parks, they actually have the same type of training as the rangers have. So yes, they are ready to act when necessary. And I think that would be able to take us a long way. I'm pinning down the issue of technology because I do believe that there's a lot of opportunity there. Whether it's digital technologies or technology around civilians and so on. But of course, we will have to look at the legalities of that so that at the end of it, all everything is done the correct way. I think I should stop at that, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Is there anybody from your colleagues who is going to add? Are you okay? There's a hand there.
Just to emphasize on what Tishu has said and the point that you've raised, Chairman, we also need to be very cognizant of the mindset of the traveler that comes into South Africa. You mentioned that we want to drive people to the rural parts and the villages of the country. If we clearly understand our markets and the different life cycle when it comes to travel of each of those markets, you would realize that it's probably Chinese and Indians won't be the market that's going to be able to help you achieve that objective. So which markets then would help you to achieve that objective? Then your much more matured markets like your Germans, like your Dutch people, those are the people where when it comes to travel, they really want to get to the true authenticity of the country and they want to be where the locals are. Which then becomes very critical because as we come up with the strategy of safety, we tend to be skewed towards the iconic places that we want to protect, the iconic places. But I think the ideal situation is that overall what we should be aiming for and what we should be gunning for as a destination is to make sure that South Africa in general as a country is a safe destination. And there's no better way of doing that by educating our South Africans about the value of tourism, and they take the responsibility of actually protecting the tourists that should come into the country. So that makes the importance of domestic travel, and once South Africans themselves start appreciating the travel within the country, they will then know and value the importance of travel itself. So my call was more to say, let's look beyond just protecting the iconic places of the country in order to optimize the value of that we can get out of tourism.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much. And thanks, TG and your collective, for the presentation. Very insightful. Honorable members, that was the second batch of the presentations in the workshop. I don't know if there is still some appetite from your side to raise issues, questions. It looks like more consumptions were done before lunch on these issues, but I'm not limiting the honorable members to raise issues. I'm just raising my general observation because I work with you on a regular basis. So we'll have those three hands. Number one, or there are four. One, two, three, four, five. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to appreciate the responses from the previous round, but also thank the presenters for their contribution today. I think it's very important that the committee obviously resolves to take certain steps going forward, and I hope that that's the outcome. But I made the point earlier, and it's very well set out in the Department of Tourism's presentation, with respect to communication protocol. And so SAPS, for example, has its protocol and communications war room, for want of a better phrase, and tourism has its own. My point was, if there's a National Tourism Safety Forum, should that, at that platform, should we not have a joint war room? So simply connecting online digitally and looping in Brigadier Naidu, for example, who's the spokesperson to the Commissioner, so that there is an on-message, in-volume narrative that can be communicated at that particular platform. And then with respect to crime prevention, I take your comments, Chair. It's a whole-of-society approach in order to prevent crime. It serves its role to try and contain and combat that crime, and it is an overwhelming task. So I think a huge amount of the emphasis today has been on how do we respond to crime after it happens. And I think the police committee, chairman or chairperson of the police committee, we need to apply our minds in much more detail as to how we tackle the issue of both federating the police service, looking at provincial police as an option, but also how do we establish in very limited resourcing and constrained fiscal environment a dedicated tourism police unit. Thank you.
Number two. Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson. There are two areas where I just wanted to make a contribution. The first one, this was a very useful exercise, Chairperson, that we begin to work together than working in silos. And the second issue, Chairperson, is around provinces, which are absent. You remember we agreed in the portfolio committee that all provinces they must be part of this workshop. It's important that we must have a follow-up, Chair, to those provinces which is they were absent, and it's important we must also get the reason why they decided not to honor this important workshop. I also want to agree with my colleague around the war room, that we must establish that war room, but it's important that we must also have a weather four times a year, this type of feedback, whether there has been any improvement on our interaction. And I would suggest that in the next, it's important that it's good that deputy ministers attended the workshop. But I will also urge in the next workshop, ministers must also attend, Chairperson. I'm not undermining deputy ministers. I know that they work as a collective. Issues which are going to be raised by a minister or still raised by the deputy minister, but it's always useful to hear the voice of the minister
around making sure that all issues which have been raised in the portfolio committee, they are implemented at a level of the department.
So, Honourable Kalipin, number three.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I will align myself with my colleagues. I think they were correct. I was going to also talk about the National Tourism Safety Forum. That is a necessity. But it also confirms what was discussed in the Portfolio Committee on Police, that there are a number of things that are missing. But having listened to the DG about the institutional mechanism, one thing that is very important that there should be a coordination. And I'm saying this because I looked at, fortunately I couldn't be here earlier due to other commitments on the police, and it's very clear that their presentation will talk about the community safety, the community policing forums and all that, and you ask yourself that where are other role players? Because the presentation from Gauteng, which I'm from the province of Gauteng, it makes me actually to think that we need more meetings, and my colleague was saying that provinces are very important to be here, because when National presents and all other other departments, we should be able to can listen and be able to have a uniform way of operation. And the question will be, the DG was saying that he visited Kenya, and I think many other departments and officials do go outside to go and look at the best practices. But how many times do you come back and implement them? And I'm glad that you've been to Kenya, and most of the time in South Africa we talk about going to Tanzania. But the simple thing about in Tanzania, the two places you go to Kilimanjaro, you go even to Ndoro Waterfall, you find that they are guides. And at home we call them the tourism safety monitor. But we don't have them in all provinces. Which are the people that were going to be actually a tool of best people to be assisting us? Because you'll save them in the monitoring, but you'll also save them in the community safety. And those are things that we learn when we go, but we don't come back and implement, but government money has been used on study tours. So next time we go on study tours, we should be able to say, what is it that we have to use? And present them back to the portfolio committees, if it's a department, so that we can know whether we are doing well. The portfolio committee on community, say, on police, when we spoke about meeting the Department of Tourism, we made a number of examples that when you arrive in UK, the first thing, if you can come across a police officer, they'll tell you, you'll ask them a question, where is this place? They're not going to say this side. They'll walk with you to show you the place. But at home, you find that most police officers are trained in SAPS. There's a budget that they've been trained, most of them in UK, in USA. But they don't come back home and implement those things. And it's either the budget is used in the right way, and the forum that is going to be there, it should be one forum coordinated in the Department of Tourism, work together with the police, because all the things that are happening, they impact into all the things that we are doing. We can criticize the media, we can do whatever, but they must be part of also the forum, because there should be people that specialize in actually reporting on the tourists and all that. If you can go to the media houses and say, who is the person who works on the tourism, you find that they don't have a stable person. And those are things that we need to build on them, not to criticize them only, but to look at also what we are doing. The last part, Chairperson, will be something that we observe, all of us. When we live here going from Cape Town to Johannesburg, it's an embarrassment. When you come to the arrivals, on the left, on the level 13, 14, general, there are these boys, when you are carrying your bag, when you go to the car, immediately they want to snap your bags, and immediately as they go to the boot, they go to the person at the window and say, money, money. Where are the police? Dirty boys, but the police officers are just next door. You see that next to the left level at the arrival, there's a parking of police, there's an office of police officers, but there's nothing. And I think this is where we scare people, because on observations we go home every time, you are watching there. It will scare somebody who's not a South African. That we need to start with ourselves, that we must clean up what is happening at the base, and people that are not the right people to push the trolleys, and they are not having any identification, let us actually make sure that we remove those people, because that's where it starts, by having trust in wherever you go. Chair, I think there are many things that we'll still discuss in our portfolio committees, but the important part is that when we invite hotels, let us invite the body of all the hotels, not one hotel to come in. Actually, we appreciate that, but I wish that other experiences of other hotels are very important. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, that's correct. Thanks, Honorable Mofokeng. Next.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Now, Chair, I'm very pleased, you know, about on the presentations. It's just that Mr. Johnson left a little bit of a bitter taste in lending when he said, you know, the deployment does not make sense. I hope I'll catch up to him correct. And if that is the case, really, you begin to wonder as to, because I don't think he's the first and the last one, you know, mentioning that. It always keep on coming from the province, I would say, that the intervention by government at this level doesn't seem to be appreciated. And that worries me. So I think really, if we are to fight crime together, you can't have such utterances from time to time. Otherwise, you know, the province should tell us, if we are to withdraw the deployment tomorrow, are they ready for the crime that is taking place in the Western Cape? Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Honorable Peter. Someone
there? Thank you very much, Chairperson. It has been a long day. Briefly, I want to talk about the respect of this sector of tourism. And I want to equate it to the Department of Sports, Arts and Recreation. Those are the departments that are not taken serious in South Africa. You can even see the budget allocation, they are the lowest. And I can tell you, Chairperson, an active nation will have a less crime. Active nation, you see them in sports, you see them in art and culture, and then you see them in our parks and all over. But there's no investment. That's why, according to my observation, that's why none of the ministers didn't come. It is not serious. It's not serious. But if we were discussing reactionary thing like tourists have been done something wrong, they were all going to be here because they want to be seen doing something. But let me leave that one. Chairperson, I'm repeating myself again. Three things that everybody knows: unemployment, inequality, and poverty. Once we defeat that three, we are going to attract investors, we are going to have less crime, so our police people, officers will do their work smart and more safer. So that's the area we have to focus on. And we cannot consider serious the reckless statements like treating Western Cape as if it's an isolation, it's an island somewhere out of South Africa. The intervention of Cape Flats, we appreciate it. Well, although we know it's not a sustainable a solution, but our people need to feel safe at the moment while we are cultivating the sustainable solution, which is to get rid of the tree. And let's talk about patriotism. When you say the media and some of the organizations are not patriotic, we talk about the reckless communications they spread abroad. There was, earlier on, it's not the media, there was a sort of communication abroad that was putting South Africa in a picture of a country that is busy killing another race and all those things, of which this was a lie. One incident, as you said at the beginning, one or two incidents, they make that is the whole nation is at war against itself and all those things. Those are reckless and unpatriotic statements and or communications across. So those, according to me, those things are the things that we must make them crime. You can't go out there and then put South Africa as if it's a slaughtering area. Whereas you go to South Africa, you come back and you still want to eat, work, and do everything. In South Africa, that you are saying is killing people every day. It should not. We have to be aggressive on these things. Reckless statements should become a crime. More especially that are chasing people away from our country. Those things should become a crime. We are not saying we must have high criminal incidents or the bad things. As we have now, the reports are contradicting Table Mountain's issue. The other report was saying Western Cape, Table Mountain, what, and then about 2010. Remember the 2010 thing? And then the other, Sunpark, came here to say, no, 2010, we don't know which 2010 you're talking about. Because that's where we got most crime incidents at Table Mountain. Those things. Let's be realistic and then report correctly without being reckless. So I think another department that we'll have to engage later is sports, art and culture, because it's also going to help us to keep our youth active and all those things, pulling them out of crime thinking and all other things. So I think that's another one we have to deal with. Chairperson, this sector is one of the good ones that is not creating jobs at the moment. It's the one that is creating jobs. If we can't protect it, I'm talking about tourism. If we can't protect it, this one, that means we want everything to fall apart. Because even if it's creating jobs that are not paying high, but at the moment, the sister is observing the unemployed. So let's protect it and then make sure it creates more jobs and more. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Mateka. Are we going to... anybody wants to respond from the presenters? The appetite is there. You wanted to say something?
Unfortunately, I'm not a presenter. Unati Henama from the Tshwane University of Technology. I teach tourism there. I would like to indicate that when I saw the invitation for this meeting, I was very excited because I think it shows a visionary committee that clearly understands its role. Today we are speaking about tourism and crime. Tomorrow you might be calling the Department of Labor to speak about a lot of undocumented labor within the tourism industry. So all I'm saying is that you get our support from academia, we'll support, we'll criticize, but I am very, very humbled and excited by your work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I was a student there some years ago. So we leave it there. Yeah, thank you very much. Are you okay, DG? Let's rather take our sister there at the back. Sorry, my sister, I didn't take your name. You introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Tanita Brandt. I'm here with CPUT, and thank you for all the presentations. Something that's surprising is that a few, I think three presentations were asking, like, who else do we need to include in here? We are the universities. I'm a big fan of bottom-up approach, and you'll be surprised what information we can actually get from our students, what we can work through with them, and remember that it's like a snowball effect. So they go home and they go discuss it with their parents and their family about what opportunities tourism can actually bring for them. So I'd like to request that when you're actually considering who else needs to be involved, consider our students and us, because we come with great force. I'm sure you've seen, you know, what the power of our students, what they bring. So I think it's really a valuable resource to consider, like collaborating with the universities on ground level as to what change they can bring, you know, and also just to use this as a platform to let them start thinking in terms of what they can actually do to become self-employed in terms of the tourism industry. So thank you. That's just it's small two things for me. Thanks.
Excellent. DJ?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We work with these universities and more. We agree that this research component is critical. Honourable Chairperson, the Register of Tourist Guides, the Register of which is Asumurumara Mpili, DDG sitting here, has approximately 11,000 people across the country. Some are employed by operators, some are freelancers, some work in parks and reserves and so on. The aspect of information provision, which is largely what they do, is part of the training that goes with the tourists monitors that are on the different sites. Now, one of the lessons, Honorable Majek, okay. One of the things that we learned out of the countries, most countries that we're saying they've got tourism police, Tanzania is an example, what they are doing, they just branded their equivalent of an EPWP program well, but it's not really police. They are well trained. They converse well. They will give proper information and so on. But in reality, it's an EPWP program. Now the reality is, they are saying they've been selling the idea of doing a feasibility study on possible tourism policy. I can confess I'm not a big fan of it. The reason for that is because it's not sustainable financially. So if we were to take a force of 5,000, we will have to make sure that we pay all the things that comes with proper employment within a government setting. And the budget to do that will not be possible. Even the money that was being talked about in terms of the tourism levy would not even come closer to it. So we take comfort in the EPWP methodology, but we also believe that the kind of training we give to them, there was a point about the nature of training and how qualitative it should be, such that by the time they exit this system, they've got something that they can take. So there's a lot of modules that are accredited training for what goes into the training of this particular group of youth. We take all the points with regards to the communications protocol, and at the moment it's almost like that war room situation, but it's not what it is called. So the two of them, the general and the DDG, they are on like daily basis conversing about what is happening on what site and so on. And they are getting feeds that are actually coming from a provincial level. So the Mpumalanga colleagues, unfortunately, they've been their clients for the last 2 to 3 weeks regularly. But that is the kind of conversation that takes place. I take calls from the VE, I take calls from the HOD, I take calls from the DDG. So all of us are in this thing. Then we then recommend, how do we approach this one? Each case will be completely different. With the what do you call it, the hotel that, with the Mount Nelson, one of the things that the GM didn't say, one of the clients who was there on the day, where it was one of the vice presidents of Singapore Airlines. And they were here to start figuring out whether they could actually fly directly to South Africa. These are the kinds of things that we have to deal with on a daily basis. And we have to make sure that message goes there, assurances go there. But there are certain things that we would tactically do and would not necessarily put it out there ultimately. So I thought I should just put that so that the context of the protocol of for communication, some of it will be to, I don't want to say let sleeping dogs lie, but if there wasn't a big thing, we should not make a big thing out of it. If there was something too big, we should make sure that we demonstrate that we've dealt with it and dealt with it properly. Thank you very much. Question?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we agreed on the summary. And we have the combined summary between the two chairs. For the sake of time, some of us were exactly leaving at 4 p.m. But to tell you that the National Tourism Safety Strategy will be driven by us as well. We will be monitoring the National Tourism Safety Forum. We'll also participate. We'll be looking at our National Joint Operational and Intelligence Joint Structures. Our response, I think, will be at the national and the provincial level with our national commissioners and our provincial commissioners. The matter of stipends for CPFs we raised in our budget speeches, we'll take that matter up again. And I think that our response from now onwards will be that we will bring the relevant partners to the table so that we have a partnership-based approach to addressing crime in the tourism sector. If we are not responsive as a collective, we do not have the luxury of pointing fingers. So we are again committing ourselves to work with you to establish and coordinate mechanisms and platforms to address these challenges. And please, as the two committees, I think we should be now having our plans in order. The National Police Commissioner said we will turn it into action plans. And I think you've heard our presentation. Could we now take whatever happened today and include it in our action plans and give it to the National Commissioner? Well, I think from our side, our priorities, honorable members from the Police Portfolio Committee, tourism will be escalated to the top of our priority list. Thank you, Chief.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Honorable Comrade Tina Jumat. Honorable members who come from provinces, our approach is that every quarter we will meet and we will have two provinces presenting their own experiences
their plans, their successes, and how they deal with challenges. So in the next quarter, on a date to be indicated, it will be Free State and Limpopo. It will be those two provinces. Today it was Gauteng and the Western Cape. So it will be like that, 2-2-2-2. The last will be three provinces in the last quarter. That's 1 point of way forward in addition to what Comrade Dina is saying. The other point relates to universities. I don't know whether you are coordinated institutions of higher learning, whether you have a body that represents all of you, because I think it will be easier at this level, unless on a voluntary basis the universities and other institutions can come on their own, will not stop you. But that body that represents institutions of higher learning, it will be important to deposit issues at that level so that we interact with them. But in our work as committees, as parliament, research, all these other things that you were mentioning, on a continuous basis we'll have to do that, to work with universities so that we engage both the lecturers and the young people there to achieve some of our objectives. The other matter here relates to communication. SANEF, I think we will find a way of discussing with you so that we can go deeper into these matters of communication and build that rapport between ourselves as Parliament and ourselves as SANEF, particularly these issues around communication. And at what point do you communicate? What must be the content? Not that we must dictate to the newsrooms on what must happen, but making sure that we prioritize the affairs of our country and become real patrons of our country. But thanks for the contributions and the commitment to work with us. We are also going to be, as far as our focus is concerned, be addressing where poverty is highly prevalent. That is your villages, it's in your townships. The townships are surrounded by informal settlements, and then your smaller towns. What exists in the bigger cities, we will then have to see how we grow that, also as part of transformation, transforming that. But after 26 years of democracy, our focus will have to go to where poverty is embedded, in the villages, in the townships surrounded by informal settlements, and then your small towns, which I prefer to call small dorpies, so that the people in the periphery, as SANEF was saying, can feel that they are part of the entirety of the economy of South Africa. So we will be doing that. Just to indicate to the provinces also that from a tourism perspective, one of the things we are going to be looking at, putting people at the center of our work and as far as oversight is concerned, is to establish at every village level, at every township level and so on, people-driven tourism oversight forums, so that we can know on an ongoing daily basis from an oversight perspective what is happening throughout all the villages in South Africa and the townships. We have taken note of the proposals that are there, including dedicated safety officers in addition to what is existing. The MOU is going to be done, lessons from Dubai, because they are number one in as far as dealing with issues of safety. Leave other things that are said about Dubai. So we will say to them how do they go around some of the things around issues of safety and so on. Learn some lessons from there. Just to indicate also to honorable members that from the side of tourism, we are going to be having an equivalent of MINMEC
on the executive side. On the executive side, there's min-men. On the parliamentary side, we are going to establish something of an equivalent for oversight purposes, working with chairpersons of tourism in provinces, and also will bring SALCA on board in that regard. In the next meeting, we will try our best to whisper the importance of presence here of the Department of Communication, Arts and Culture, ERCO, Home Affairs. For now, we will try and make sure that those departments are there. Somewhere in the past, I had made a proposal, Honorable Motek, to the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture to work together with the Department of Education. And I was saying to them, when the Department of Education, around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, the classes are over for our learners, the department must take over until around 5, 6 in the afternoon is Sports, Arts and Culture. From 2 o'clock, they just take over, waiting together to make sure that they keep these kids now active in every school. Government being government with these intricacies of bureaucracy, that was never realized. But it's very important, as you were saying, we must be able to answer the question, what happens to these young people after 1 o'clock? What do they do? Right? So one of the answers lies in sports, arts, and culture, that they must take over until 5, 6 o'clock. From there, the kids must go safely and so on. So I'm sure working together with all these departments, one day we'll be able to realize this particular object. We will clean up the way forward issues and send them to the rest of the provinces and all the participants that are here. Our communication platforms are all available. Everybody who is here and those who are not here, you can talk to us at any time. You know our communication platforms are there in the website of Parliament. We want to be influenced. Sometimes if you want to call us to your institution at TUT, in any other institution, we can come, time allowing, we can come to the institution to come and interact with yourselves, because the objective is what? To make South Africa a much, much, much better place to live in for the current generations and future generations. Otherwise, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for the qualitative, incisive, precise, and very educative contributions that have been made here today. Those who are flying back, fly SAA very safely back home to boost the revenue side of SAA. Those who are driving, drive back safely. And may God be with you. Thank you very much. Oh, before we close,
Sorry, Chair, just for our committee, the Portfolio Committee on Police, is just an announcement that we meet tomorrow outside of the Marx building at 9 o'clock, and we will be leaving from there to later here. We will have our joint briefing, and then we will put all the details again on the group, the WhatsApp group. Thank you. Sorry, we had to do our announcement.
No, you are in order. We are together for the next 5 years, me and you. And thanks very much for the cooperation. Thank you very much. God bless.